from KQED.
Support for the California Report comes from the Wesley Foundation, recognizing young social entrepreneurs through the Wesley Prize for Young Innovators of California. Digital Foundry, working with leading organizations to jumpstart digital innovation. More online at digitalfoundry.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
On today's California Report magazine, a secret world hidden in the forests of Northern California. We know pot is an unregulated industry with people operating below the radar, but you may not know that women who work to trim the buds can wind up abused, sometimes even victims of sex trafficking.
There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of, you know, if you report this, nobody will believe you.
And would a ballot measure to legalize recreational marijuana put a stop to sexual exploitation?
The status quo really isn't working. These types of crimes need to be addressed in a very serious way.
I'm Sasha Coca, and this is the California Report magazine. So today we're going to hear stories about sexual exploitation in the pot industry, how women who come to trim the buds wind up getting abused. And this week, we're devoting the whole show to an investigation by Shoshana Walter. She's a reporter with Reveal, the show from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. Hi, Shoshana.
Hi, Sasha.
So California already legalized medical marijuana, and now voters are considering legalizing recreational pot. You found that even though pot is becoming more regulated, there's a dark side to the trade.
Yeah, I mean, basically decades of battles between law enforcement and growers have created this culture of silence there, a secrecy that's really entrenched in the region.
So you spent a lot of time recently in a place called Petrolia. Tell us about it.
Petrolia is the small town of about 400. It's in Humboldt County, which is basically the hub of California's multi-billion dollar marijuana industry. As a result, it's a pretty secretive place, not usually welcoming to outsiders. But I did meet this one farmer named Sam Epperson, who allowed me to come talk to him at his farm. He showed me around his two-acre farm. It's just down the road from the general store.
We're standing in the middle of the garden. You can see at the base of each plant, there's a drip system here with an emitter.
Sam is in his early 40s. His farm is just filled with rows of tomatoes, cabbage, squash, and also marijuana. When I arrived in June, his pot plants were 5 feet tall. There were about 60 of them, bright green and leafy. He's been around marijuana most of his life. He grew up there, and he's the son of hippies who grew pot. Growing pot is actually a lot of work, even on a relatively small plot of land like Sam's. There's the daily watering, inspecting each plant for bugs or mold. Then the plants are harvested, dried, the buds removed, and neatly trimmed, usually with small scissors. All this work is too much for one or two people, especially during the big fall harvest. So each year, a big migrant workforce arrives. People known around here as trimmigrants.
So wait a minute, the people who are coming to trim these buds, are they like farm workers?
Not exactly. They're college students, artists, teachers, working professionals, homeless backpackers from around the country and the world. A lot of them are U.S. citizens. Many have wonderful experiences working as trimmigrants in the pot industry. But I discovered that some trimmigrants have pretty bad experiences. They've been sexually assaulted, deprived of food and water, left without pay. I heard from several women who said they were asked to trim topless, offered higher wages to trim topless. Mm-hmm. I met a teenage girl who said she began working on a pot farm when she was 12, and she was kind of passed around to provide sexual favors to anyone to whom the grower owed a debt. So the stories really vary. The main story that I reported involves a 21-year-old trimmer who I'm calling Terry to protect her identity. Terry came up from Southern California and found work on Sam Epperson's pot farm in Petrolia. Sam showed me a dark shed with a whirring fan.
Well, what are these?
These are more flowers from the depth. This is just one individual plant, but it's dry. I need to put it in a bag.
Terry worked here every day with three other trimmers. They wore aprons, swapped jokes, tallied their work with pencil and paper. Then one morning, Terry came in upset.
And I asked her if something inappropriate had happened, and she said yes. Then my partner spoke with her and gave her a physical examination, because she's a nurse. And she just looked at her bruises.
It turns out the previous night, Terry had met another grower at the local bar. He offered to give her a ride home and also offered a job. Jen Breyer Bonpain was Terry's therapist, and she said something terrible happened.
He went the wrong way in the truck, pulled up to the gate of this very dark, heavily forested eucalyptus grove.
Terry didn't want to talk on tape, but she agreed to let Jen tell her story.
And stopped the truck and started touching her and said, "You're my b-. If you do anything with anyone else, I'll kill you." And she said something like, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "I'll freeze your body and break you into pieces and feed you to the animals."
Terry said he raped her in a nearby trailer. The man's name is Kalen Meserve. He's a local guy, the captain of the volunteer fire department, the son of a prominent environmental activist who first moved to Petrolia in the late 1960s. And rumors about what happened that night just quietly spread around town. A lot of people were quick to defend Kalen. He grew up here. You know, she's an outsider. Here's what Sam Epperson had to say.
The initial reaction of even some of my friends were, well, what really happened? Or was she asking for it? Or who even really was she?
You know, Terry's assault posed a dilemma for a lot of people in town, including Sam. He had vouched for Kalen. He encouraged Terry to consider working for him. On the other hand, Kalen was already known for his hot temper.
You know, in any small town where there's an allegation of rape, some people in the community might be quick to defend the alleged perpetrator, others the victim. But in Kalen's case, it sounds like there was another layer.
Yeah, a lot of people in town were feeling like he was kind of greedy. He was buying up a lot of land for large-scale pot grows, and some people just felt like the power had gotten to his head.
And Shoshana, all of this is playing out in a community where people are really guarded because there's so much secrecy in the pot industry.
Right. I mean, people really don't want to talk openly about their involvement in marijuana. They really mistrust the cops. That's what Terry's therapist, Jen Breyer Bonpain, told me.
I think of Petrolia as this little town kind of hanging off the edge of the world. Often there's a sense of like not wanting to involve law enforcement because it impinges on people's rights. People might get in trouble for stuff related to pot. So yeah, and then there's also this like caretaking part, which is the more positive part of that, I think, of like restorative justice. Like, we don't want to just throw people to the wolves.
So after what happened to Terry, instead of contacting law enforcement, people got together at each other's homes and they kind of debated what to do about Kalen Meserve. They bandied about a bunch of different ideas. One of them was to form a community tribunal, gather all the elderly women in town to chase after Kalen with their shoes, send a large group of men to his doorstep to kind of force him into rehab, talk some sense into him. As for Terry, you know, Jen says that she was still in shock.
She just wanted to disappear and never speak of it.
We're talking with Shoshana Walter, an investigative reporter with the show Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. So how big of a problem is this kind of abuse and sexual exploitation? I mean, how many women are we talking about?
There's no way to quantify it because, as we were just talking about, you know, there's this culture of silence. Most people who experience abuse don't report it to law enforcement. But over my time reporting there, I did collect, you know, almost more than 24 stories of sexual harassment, sexual abuse, trafficking. And the crime rate is really high in Humboldt County for such a rural place. Humboldt County has the highest per capita rate of missing people in the state, for example. So there are women and organizations working with sexual assault victims, but there are not really any organizations working to help workers in general. So one of the women that I met, Deborah Carey, she's actually one of the few voices for Trimmigrants. I tagged along with Deb as she walked the streets of Garberville in the height of harvest season.
Hey, how's it going? I haven't seen you in a while.
Every harvest season, she introduces herself to all the new arrivals. She has a list of safety tips that she gives them to make sure they don't get picked up by an abusive boss.
Well, I usually give her a card, and I tell her that to not let them blindfold her and to remember where she's going. Everywhere you go here is a long ways away, so you're not going to be able to walk out of that. So it can just get very serious very quickly.
Deb says that marijuana has actually done a lot of good for the region. It's helped fund alternative schools and community groups and nonprofits. But as the pot industry has grown, she says those community values are no longer front and center.
Let's get to this measure that's on the ballot this fall. Medical marijuana is already legal in California, but this would make recreational pot use legal, and it's looking like it might actually pass. Does Deb Carey think legalizing pot, regulating the trade, would help?
Deb and a lot of other people are not so sure. It would make it legal for adults over age 21 to possess up to an ounce of marijuana, and it would regulate and impose taxes on the pot industry. But marijuana is still illegal under federal and many state laws, and currently a lot of growers sell on the black market because it's more profitable. Their concern is if marijuana is legalized, prices for them go down. So a lot of growers, law enforcement, even lawmakers believe that if legalization occurs, the black market's going to continue, and so will the abuse.
Okay, so what is law enforcement doing about sexual exploitation of Trimmigrants at this point?
It's interesting. The police agree that there's a problem and it's getting worse, but most of the resources are still totally focused on the drug trade itself. And the drug cases really provide a lot of revenue for them through civil forfeiture.
So basically, that's like the cash or the cars or property that they seize during these drug raids. They can keep that?
Yeah, the local police get a cut. And last year, the pot-growing region known as the Emerald Triangle had the highest rate of civil asset forfeiture in the state. I spoke to Annie Mills. He's the chief of police of Eureka. And he agrees that there should be more prosecutions for these crimes and abuses. But he also says that trimmers need to realize they're placing themselves in danger.
That's obviously not to say that that woman or that young man deserves to be sexually assaulted. They absolutely do not. But I think we can all do things to minimize our risk. And not going to one of these grows is a good way to minimize your risk.
It's not like the police are sitting on their hands. One of the things Chief Mills is doing is trying to discourage Trimmigrants from coming to the area in the first place. So he kind of put together this reverse sting where his department posted a fake ad posing as a grower on Craigslist, offering work on a pot farm.
Message 3.
Hi, this is Shai.
This is one of hundreds of job seekers who have responded to the ads with calls and emails.
Of needing help with clipping.
Of course, there are no jobs. What the applicants get is a stern warning from Chief Mills that goes something like this.
You didn't contact a grower, you contacted the police. And you need to be aware of these things. One is that we have a very high incident of violence in our county. On the grows, and some people come up to grow and don't go back.
So how effective is Chief Mills' plan? Is he actually deterring Trimmigrants with these reverse stings?
We don't know. Right now, it's almost the end of harvest season, and there are hundreds and thousands of trimmers up there, so they're still coming.
Shoshana, you kind of left me hanging back there with the story in Petrolia. What happened with Terry, who's the Trimmigrant that said that a grower raped her. Did they ever confront the guy?
Well, one of the growers in this group actually went to his house and tried to get him to go into rehab, and he refused. And for about a week after, they were kind of considering what to do about Terry and Kaylin Meserve. Then they found out about another woman who had accused Kaylin of raping her the year before. Kaylin was a volunteer firefighter, and his boss at the firehouse even knew about it and didn't call the police. All he did was make Kaylin promise to do better. That was it. This is Jen Breyer-Bonpain again. She was Terry's therapist.
There was just a lot of fear. Like, if this is just going to keep happening, if we don't have something on record to kind of hold him accountable, whatever form that takes or however far it goes.
So residents finally decided to call the police. They asked Terry to do it. But almost immediately, the process seemed to confirm their fears about the criminal justice system. Terry was asked to come to the sheriff's office headquarters, which is a long drive down a crumbling road. The deputy who met with her was brusque, and he refused to allow Jen to accompany her into the interview room. And after that brief meeting, the deputy said the sheriff's office would not be charging Kaylin. They'd already gone to talk with him, and there would be no charges, no restraining order.
I think she felt even more kind of shamed, and also just given the runaround. She made this big trip into town. She had to really work up the courage to do it. Again, she was doing it because community members wanted her to put it on record in case something happened in the future. And then she was treated like that.
After that experience, the residents in Petrolia sprung into action. They flooded the district attorney's office with emails and phone calls. The earlier victim came forward. There was a new DA, a woman with experience handling sex crimes. Prosecutors renewed the investigation, and they charged Kaylin Meserve with raping Terry and the other woman. He was convicted, and this summer, he was sentenced to 23 years in prison. It's the first prosecution of a grower for sexually assaulting a trimmer in Humboldt County, and it's a big deal for people in Petrolia. But when I went back to talk to Sam Epperson on his farm, he's the guy who originally hired Terry, he was pretty despondent. Sam testified against Kaylin Meserve. He wanted to make sure nothing like this would ever happen again. But like a lot of people here, he feels conflicted.
My advice would have been to him, but he never came and talked to me, would have been to immediately go into drug rehab, go see a sex therapist that deals with specifically with those kinds of crimes, and to apologize to the community.
To Sam, that's more in keeping with the community spirit of Petrolia, the way things used to be when people didn't worry so much about abuse or profits or outsiders.
You're listening to a special edition of the California Report magazine, and today we're focusing on sexual exploitation of women who work in the pot industry. We're talking with reporter Shoshana Walter of Reveal about how thousands of these so-called trimmigrants travel to Northern California every year for the big fall harvest, like right now. But they're not all just college students or backpackers or hippies. Shoshana, you found that sometimes they're actually people forced into this work against their will.
That's right. I also encountered undocumented immigrants, even some potential victims of human trafficking. Let me tell you about one woman I met named Carmen. She's from a small town in central Mexico where she was living with her family. They were really financially struggling. Then 2 years ago, Carmen and her sister met a man named Baldemar Alvarez on Facebook. He said he owned large properties in Northern California, and he offered them a bright future.
He told my sister and me, girls, when you get here, you're going to be very comfortable. You're going to have a job. I talked to some friends who own restaurants, and they're going to give you a job. You two only need to worry about crossing the border, and your life will change.
Your life will change. It's the promise so many undocumented immigrants hope to hear. It's also a common ploy used by traffickers.
So what happened to Carmen?
She left her family in Mexico, and a smuggler brought her across the border into the United States. but there wasn't a restaurant job waiting for her. Instead, Baltimore took her to an isolated house about 150 miles north of San Francisco, and he put her to work on a cluster of pot grows.
All the time I was in fear. If the police catch me, they're going to arrest me. They're not going to let me explain. They're not going to believe me.
When Carmen wasn't working, she lived with Baltimore and his two sons. She says he ordered her to cook and clean the house, and she says he also forced her to have sex with him, to repay him for the $12,000 he said he spent smuggling her into the country.
Did he give you any idea of how long you would owe him?
Yes, he said that I should be with him, through appreciation and payment of everything he did for me, for at least 2 years. And still, I wouldn't finish paying him.
Carmen told me she didn't know anyone. She didn't speak much English. She felt isolated and trapped in kind of this rural setting. In August 2014, after nearly 5 months of this, she asked Baltimore to take her to a clinic for stomach pains. A nurse examined her and gave her some disturbing news.
They told her she was 7 weeks and 6 days pregnant.
That's Teresa Borhun. She works with victims of sexual abuse in Mendocino County. She says Carmen told the nurse that Baltimore was keeping her against her will and forcing her to have sex with him almost every day.
She was really upset. She was in tears and didn't know where to go. She didn't know nobody in this county.
So did the medical staff report it to the police? Did they ever arrest this guy?
Well, a few days later, sheriff's deputies showed up at his house. They brought in Baltimore and Carmen for questioning. But from the beginning, they seemed to kind of doubt Carmen's story. She told me one detective suggested she was making it up to get immigration documents. And when the questioning was over, Carmen says this is what the detective told her.
Unfortunately, at this time, we do not have any evidence to detain him. Everything you say, he denies.
Deputies did arrest Baltimore Alvarez for illegal marijuana cultivation, but he was out of jail in 20 minutes and never prosecuted.
Wow. So what did law enforcement tell you about this case?
Basically nothing. I was able to get documents through public records requests, and I got a hold of some other records, but the Mendocino County Sheriff, Tom Ullman, refused to answer any questions. He said the case is still under investigation and no one in his office would talk about it. But I was able to find Baltimore Alvarez to try to get his side of the story.
Wait, you actually talked to the guy that allegedly raped Carmen? He was willing to talk to you?
Yeah, I went to his house a few times. No one was ever there. But finally, just before finishing the story, I reached him on his cell phone. And he told me Carmen's story is basically a lie.
I thought she was my wife. You know, we were supposed to get married and we're planning to make a family. That was her and my agreement.
He admitted that he paid someone to sneak Carmen across the border, and he said Carmen still owes him for that. But he insisted he was trying to help her earn money for her family back in Mexico. Then I tracked down other women who knew Baltimore, including the mother of one of his children, and she told me Baltimore had abused her too, after bringing her into the U.S. from Mexico. And she said there were other women.
Whatever this person is, she's lying too. I mean, I swear it's not the case. I never abused her or anything. You know, everything, you help someone and all you get is a stab in the back. You know what I mean?
So what ended up happening to Carmen?
With help from Teresa Borhun, the woman from the domestic violence shelter, she boarded a Greyhound bus and fled to safety in another state.
Have you had any reaction from the pot industry since your story appeared online? Have they said anything about the abuses that you've uncovered?
Well, it's interesting. The day after my investigation was published, Hezekiah Allen, the executive director of the California Growers Association, sent out an email to all of his members basically saying prohibition on marijuana, what he called a multi-generational failure of public policy, gave safe harbor to criminals. And now he's calling for pot growers to stand up, to report abuse when they see it.
This was such a stark reminder of the fact that the status quo really isn't working. We really do need each other. We really do need to address these concerns. in a more open way. You know, we shouldn't be uncomfortable about reporting these types of crimes.
Basically, he's saying law enforcement needs to shift its priority away from cracking down on marijuana farms and more on responding to some of the abuses in the industry.
So does he think legalizing pot under Prop 64 would help root out some of this kind of exploitation? I mean, I know I've reported on other industries like the janitorial industry, farm workers, you know, where women have been raped. And the argument is that at least if the industry's regulated, then it could be easier to track down abuse or stop exploitation.
Right. And under the new regulations that are being developed and under Proposition 64, marijuana workers will be considered agricultural workers. So they'll have the same rights as any other agricultural worker. But some people believe that Proposition 64 is not going to stamp out the illegal trade. On the other hand, there's a lot of concern that the initiative really favors big business. And Alan says his group, which has about 750 members, mainly in Northern California, they're totally split over Prop 64. He's basically concerned that the way the initiative is written, it'll preserve an underground market, the culture of secrecy, and because of that, the abuses will continue.
Shoshana, you started reporting this story about the sexual abuse and exploitation of women on pot farms more than a year ago. So where are some of the people that we've heard about a year later? What's happened to them now?
Well, Terry, like many Trumigrants, moved away from Petrolia. And Carmen, the woman from Mexico who says she was trafficked to Northern California, she moved to another state, and she's now working as a cook at a Mexican restaurant and living in a small two-bedroom apartment with her father, aunt, uncle, nephew, and her daughter, who's now 1 year old.
At last we heard, she was pregnant after being assaulted.
Right. At first, Carmen hated the idea of having the child of the man she says abused her. But that feeling didn't last. Now, Carmen says, she can't imagine life without her.
You've been listening to a special edition of the California Report magazine. We've been talking with Shoshana Walter, who spent more than a year reporting a story about the sexual exploitation of Trimmigrants, people who work in the marijuana harvest. You can read her whole investigation at californiareport.org. This story was produced by Michael Montgomery in collaboration with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. The California Report magazine is a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director is Susie Racho. Seal Muller is our technical director. We had additional engineering this week from Jim Bennett and Howard Gelman. Our online producer is David Marks. Our interns are Lacey Jane Roberts and Eli Wertschafter. The California Report's senior editor is Victoria Maulione. Our editorial staff includes Ingrid Becker, Holly Kernan, and Ethan Lindsay. I'm Sasha Coca. Thanks for listening. This is the California Report magazine.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.